This is the Skirted Roundtable. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings.
This is Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8.
And Joni Webb with Code to Texas.
And this week on the Skirted Roundtable, we're very excited, particularly Joni and I, to welcome set decorator extraordinaire Beth Rubino, who is actually, I should have said, Academy Award nominated set decorator Beth Rubino, who fans of Something's Gotta Give and the current It's Complicated have been drooling over her work for a very long time. So, Beth, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We wanted to talk, as we do with all of our guests, about your background and how you came into the world of set decorating.
I had a very formal art background. I had originally thought I would end up being a painter in New York or Paris. I grew up in New York and studied art, painting, printmaking, and then went on to stage design, theater arts. When I came back to New York or after college, after my education, I started doing off Broadway and found that paying rent and eating was a priority of mine. And theater was really challenging to sustain living in New York the way I wanted to. So I started pursuing independent film. And actually, we'll talk about afterwards, but I started out production designing small movies. And as time went on, art directed for many, many years, and then finally started decorating films. That is the chronology of my career, from artist to set decorator. And go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that the very big prominence of very interesting art in all of the movies you've decorated, I think that shows your art background.
Oh, well, thank you. It's, there's something I found recently, and I'm actually considering, I went back and I have a very, very large archive, and I started looking at movies or literally trying to consolidate. And was looking at pictures of films. I've been doing this for two decades. And I took many, many pictures over the years of windows or looking through the sets and found enormous visual thread over, 30, 40 movies. Hmm. It was really fascinating for me. My husband and I are looking at these pictures and wow, I'm thinking of doing a book of just your own journey of storytelling in this industry. And from my perspective, what I do, where actors call themselves method actors, I call myself a method decorator. And I really, really try to encompass the character and through the character then give a visual voice.
You know, I was wondering that. How much do you work with the director? The director comes to you, I'm assuming, with the character already in place and the storyline and all that thing. How do you all work together?
You know, every director is unique in their process. And every, star-studded actor, hence, is the same. They all have their own method or methodology in which they work. Many, many directors do not, they'll give a framework of the visual and we are hired to fill in that void and to create that visual. There are some directors that are very visual. It truly depends. I have a wonderful, for instance, there was a movie I did years ago called Sleepers with Robert De Niro, Kevin Bacon, Brad Pitt. We were doing a scene, Barry Levinson was the director, a very, very wonderful director. And
I love him.
They were rehearsing the scene. So we had set up De Niro's set, which was a very modest priest's bedroom. And while they were rehearsing, I just wanted to put things out for De Niro because he's very, very tactile. I took the laundry. We put things. We are as concerned about what is in drawers. I always say this: what's on the bedside table, what's inside, as on top.
I feel it has enormous intrinsic value for the actors. You know, producers have a different point of view. But I took the laundry that we had beautifully folded in from the top drawer and put it on the bed and then put a lid on the drawer. So I basically showed De Niro, here's a pile here. And they both looked at me, and, you know, De Niro and the director both were like, stop. And they asked me to go through how I physically saw the scene talking. Wow. And I then just, you know, picked up the little bit of laundry, folded it, put it in, and they built the entire scene around that. That was such a unique situation, but it was so, if anything is a rewarding moment in your career,
God.
It just, you know, they just loved that was there, and that became a real metaphor for De Niro. You know, it was just, it worked.
So I didn't even think about that aspect. I mean, you're not only working with the director, you know, and you're also, it does truly become a waltz within, a dance within all the different parts and pieces, the acting, the director.
Can we maybe spend a little time talking about, because the one thing I think very few of us not in the industry understand is the difference between all the various things, the production designer, the art director, the set decorator versus the set designer, all those things. And you know, it's a very, there's unions involved, and it's a very specific roles that each plays. So can you sort of, starting at the top, tell us how all these different roles work together and who's responsible for what?
Absolutely. And I will start with one of the biggest misnomers is the Academy Awards. The category is art direction. The two people that get nominated for an Oscar as a shared credit, they both would get a statue, is the production designer and the set decorator. The production designer ostensibly is the big picture. That person is the big concept, is the visual concept, and is there to be the voice of the director. Some production designers are very involved in architecture. Some production designers are very involved in the entire process. Some production designers are very hands-on in decorating. It just, whatever their background is, that generally is where their strength is. But nevertheless, the production designer is the general. The art director is responsible, is the basically the head of management. They make sure construction, paint, the set designers who are drafting. It's just like an architect's office. You know, you've got the architect and you've got all the people drafting. That's not to minimize everyone's creativity and their enormous input. It is an industry that is built on everybody's participation. But they draft, and the art director basically is the manager, or sort of like a coordinator of all these departments, and make sure everything is working together cohesively and staying on schedule and budget. The set decorator is responsible for the visuals that is not the set walls or painted walls by the crews. That's to say, an art department or a production designer or an art director, as sets are done, you can get an empty shell. A perfect example would be if you're doing a restaurant, a restaurant. You're getting a four-wall set. Everything else is decorating.
Oh, okay.
And then there's props. And the prop master is responsible for the props that the actors physically touch. There's enormous fine line between, you know, if a set is dressed, actors will pick up and touch everything. But things that are scripted is what the prop master is responsible for. Either the actor picks up a Bible or picks up a glass or, you know, pours themselves a scotch. Those specific things become their responsibility because they need multiples of it. And, you know, it becomes something very focused.
So
there's also, bear with me one second. There's also within that, there's special effects.
there are, you know, there's IT, there's tech people, there's audio people, the painters, the scenic department has a huge play in what's done. Does this help?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's great.
I never thought of the props. You know, I would never think of that. But true, because you have to reshoot a scene. If they drink the water, you have to have it refilled for each scene, you know, each shot of each scene. I would never have thought of that.
Not only that, but what we do is that actually we supply, you know, my department, we supply, when you say water, like we would supply all the glasses, all the silverware, all the plates. And then although the props then serve the food on top of it. So we have high multiples. Bedding, you know, if actors have makeup on or body makeup or hairspray, you know, we have the things that you think are so mundane, we will have, you know, inventory of because it gets dirty or soiled and then it's irreplaceable.
And that's, I think, what I was thinking when you were talking about the prop people are responsible for what the actors touch. And I was thinking of, like, in the movie Something's Gotta Give, in the dining room scene, one of the questions I've gotten numerous times from people just from doing a few blog posts about the movie, and not that I can ever answer any of these questions, is what are the glasses? You know, what were those glasses? And so there you have a case where did you pick those glasses?
I wasn't clear about that. Glass, silverware, anything that's what you eat, the vessels or the utensils that you use, that generally would be under my supervision.
Because it's the overall look.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, which makes...
But the prop director would be there to be sure that there's enough full glasses of water ready for each shot.
That's exactly correct. Yeah. And they'll have the chef out in back making sure that each plate looks the same.
For each shot.
And then on top of that, you've got probably the continuity person that makes sure that shot to shot it always looks the same.
Yeah, everybody is, you know, monitoring that. And, you know, yes, definitely.
Well, I want to get down to brass tacks. And I'm sure you know that the Something's Gotta Give house is probably the most well-known or most well-loved movie house ever. Let's start with the beginning. How did you meet Nancy Myers? That was your first movie, correct, with her?
With her, yes.
Uh-huh.
John Hutman and I, John was a production designer. John had done What Women Want with her a few years before. John and I had done probably 8 or 10 movies together. I actually have lost count. I'd have to look at our films to figure out how many over the years. And he asked me to consider doing the film, and I met with him and Nancy, and then I was hired.
There's been, over the years, as Joni said, this, you know, I think we know just from our blogs, people all over the world. I mean, I get emails from people in Africa wanting to know about this movie, which is just amazing. But how was the process of designing this set? There's been, over the years, different people sort of taking the credits, not quite...
Credit.
Credits.
That's a can of worms. The process is, as we do with every movie, we start with the script. We come up with an entire visual map of what we want to do, and we present it to the director. And Nancy is very, her scripts are based with the visual thread of, that's that story. The house was the fourth character, the fourth main character in that film.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, interestingly, as Nancy, who is the writer, director, and producer, so, I mean, you're talking about enormous autonomy.
Yeah.
She still was open and, you know, specifically, I really thought, and being a New Yorker and sort of, you know, a book fanatic myself, that no matter where you are, you live with mass amounts of books. You know, you're a writer. You don't have to have your... what you live with in the city very, very, very different from where you live in the Hamptons or your country home. And, you know, she researches enormously. She wrote to all her friends that were thespians and writers and concurred that what we were thinking was the layer, a certain layer that we wanted visually was okay with her. You know, she wanted enormous authenticity to what the architecture of her character was. So she builds a visual, she builds this character, and then she's very hands-on as to what the visual interpretation of that is. So in the process, we showed her lots and lots, you know, lots and lots and lots of pictures and reference. We want to do this, we want to do that, fabrics. And eventually we came up with the barometer of what we wanted to do, and we commenced.
Okay, so who came up with the idea, let's say, of the blue and white living room? Was that your visual for the design of the house?
I found a car, a rug from the a store in New York. This is how things really evolved. The living room was enormous, and we had presented a lot of pictures to Nancy. She signed off on the visual palette, and I found a rug in New York that was enormous in length, and it was big enough for us to cut up, to have re-sewn, and fit the entire living room. It was an antique blue and white Dury.
Oh, I didn't know it was an antique.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
I knew it had been cut up, but I didn't know it was an antique.
And actually, if you look really closely, I think you could probably see in stills, not in the film, the lines are not apps. The lines don't line up exactly because it was an antique, and because we cut it up, this giant rug that was like 70 feet long, as we cut it, you know, the lines really reduced in width. Mm-hmm. So when we cut it and then we re-lined it up, they don't line up, and the lines, you know, very much decrease in size.
Well, I think you're right. Okay. You can see it in the stills, but not in the movie. But you know, and I think in the stills, it adds to the comfortable nature of the feel of the house anyway.
I have to say, when we cut, I sent it out to a company to cut and re-sew it. You know, you're just crossing your fingers and your toes, honestly. I hope this works.
Yeah, that rug. I wrote a post about, you know, how to get this look and what were the elements of the house that you really needed to copy, you know, and that rug, it was such a important part of the design. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's why people are fascinated with it.
I know that there, I think maybe your blog, I mean, as people have asked me questions, I then, with people's questions being much more research than I realized that it has led to a lot of other questions. And people were saying that possibly from Elle magazine, that we had taken something. When we set up our visuals for Nancy, we're looking at so many different sources. But nothing was based, it's a total compilation of everything visual that mm-hmm. we could come up with. And having said that, what determines our, I'm gonna actually blow you away when I tell you this comment. What determines what we do is really is based on budget and time. I started prepping that the second week of November. There was a 2-week Christmas hiatus. And as you know, almost all the fabric houses, everyone goes closes down for Christmas for 2 or 3 weeks. And we started shooting like the first or second week of February. So we literally had 7 or 8 working weeks.
Oof.
From the minute I started that film to the first time we shot camera in that set.
Wow.
So decision making was based on lot of decisions were also based on availability, accessibility, and that dictates, you know, in film you may have A, B, or C choices, and you have to be able to be flexible to work all those options, because it really is mercurial in the sense that whatever makes it all happen budgetarily and in time, that's how the whole thing melds. You don't have the luxury of waiting 12 weeks for a piece of furniture.
So to clear up all the rumors, there wasn't a house in the Hamptons that y'all went into and copied?
No, we built that house on
stage. It's Sony Studios in Culver City. John Huntman and Nancy Myers scouted many, many, many houses on the East Coast in the Hamptons. And I think, you know, he looked elsewhere. I think he maybe even looked in the Carolinas and possibly on the West Coast. That I actually don't recall. We based and we did shoot an exterior of a house in the Hamptons. It was a very, very, very cold May. We totally, my department, which also has the greens department, we absolutely embellished and put in every flower and leaf you see in the front of that house. It's all artificial. There wasn't a leaf on the tree. It was one of the coldest Mays you could imagine. There wasn't, the deciduous trees had not leafed out at all. The interior of the house, which we based the exterior on, was not even similar in any way, shape, or form to our physical house on stage. We were able to put furnishings and window treatments in the front so that it looked as if it was the same and we'd have a little bit more depth, but you couldn't open up the door and look in at all because the physical space was terribly different.
There's probably all these people that John went into their house and they think they were the one, you know, that
inspired. Well, you know, I have to say, like, the dining room, a very dear friend of mine, the dining room is based on her. She lived in Litchfield. I have a farm in Connecticut, and she has an 18th century old preacher's house. And her dining room, which is teeny and fabulous. I showed Nancy a picture in a book that showed my friend Diana's wall in her dining room with all the plates on it. And Nancy loved that. And we built our dining room sort of on that imagery. You know, so people ask where inspiration's from. It's, you know, my friend's dining room because she has a great dining room.
I had a client that called me Christmas Day, you know, you have to go see this movie. You have to go see this movie. I want my house to look just like that. The dining room. I want my dining room. Oh, the dining room was so gorgeous. So that's so interesting. It's your friend's dining room, you know?
Well, not the room. I should be clear. The back wall.
The wall, right.
The wall with the ironstone collection. Her dining room was photographed in a beautiful book of 19th century, I think, New England homes, or it could have been of barns.
Remember the name of that book?
I can get that. I can just, you know, call Diana and find out exactly what it is. I don't recall now. So nevertheless, I showed this was in, you know, one of our meetings with Nancy, and I showed her this picture, and she loved the essence of that look. And what a riot that it happens to be, you know, someone who's very near and dear. I didn't sell it as a very dear friend.
And the slip covers, enormous amount of energy was spent trying to figure out what fabric it was. For some reason, I was convinced it was Benison. And then someone...
It was not.
Yeah, it was a Lee Jofa.
Yeah, it was a grape and hydrangea.
Yeah.
Brick.
Yeah, it was a Lee Jofa's. I think
it's called Bordeaux Toile.
Yeah, Bordeaux Toile, right.
I know.
I just saw it tonight.
I've been selling it to people.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's gorgeous.
When did you realize, Beth, that this, like, this cottage industry around Something's Gotta Give had sort of sprung up between kitchen designers? It suddenly became the kitchen to have, and the newspaper articles. When did it start sort of bubbling up to the surface for you, how influential this movie set?
Well, as soon as the movie was released, I started getting emails from people wanting to know specifically where fabrics were from, where furnishings were from, minutiae. I mean, people were asking... there was an egg cup holder. I got an email that there was an egg cup holder that she took out of the refrigerator, and the woman hadn't seen one of those in years. And I'd actually bought it at Brimfield, which is...
in Western Mass.
Correct. So people really focused on things in that film. They froze frame.
Oh, yeah.
But this is actually before it came out in video. So there was, as soon as the film came out, the amount of emails was staggering. Absolutely staggering. I'm talking hundreds weekly. Hundreds. So, you know, it doesn't take long to realize, wow, this is very much liked. And then within that first year, I got a call from Restoration Hardware. The creative director wanted me to come out and consult. And they very much, for the next 6 or 8 months, maybe a year after my meeting with them, and I don't mean necessarily my specific meeting, but the film was the influence for them. You could actually see how much they had shaped their visual thread on the film. Their catalogs were...
I never knew this.
Yeah. Well, yes. You could definitely, I agree, because when I did a post, the first time I did a movie post was on this movie, and I used, you know, the Get This Look, here's different pieces, and almost everything was from Restoration Hardware, not realizing there actually was a connection, but that's where I was finding everything.
But very little in that film, by the by.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Two or three things in that movie that were purchased at Restoration Hardware, period, in that house.
Yeah, but Restoration Hardware was using the film as inspiration for...
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, you could definitely see it.
Beth, do you ever feel like the director sort of, I don't know what the word would be, sort of say, wait a minute, I have a movie going on here as well, you know, when the attention gets so focused on the interiors and the set direction?
You know, Nancy Meyers' films are focused on the visual. As I said, when something's got a given, and it's complicated too, is very much the same. Her, part of her storytelling is about it's about the physical environment, and that's how she wants it. I mean, she is the architect of that. That is her. She writes. She is the writer and director. Other directors, you know, that's their storytelling is through the acting, or their storytelling is you know, what they focus on is very different things. So. Mm-hmm. To answer you, I think if you're saying sort of this, you know, focus on the sets really happens with Nancy's films from the public point of view. I mean, a segue. I did World Trade Center. We built Ground Zero, and we built not only Ground Zero, but we also built the concourse where all the stores were in the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. Without product placement, you know, because of the political connotation, we had to do everything ourselves. That set was an acre in size.
Wow.
A solid acre set. 237 cold tons of metal, my crew, and, you know, we put into that set. You know, in a very deliberate, very thoughtful way. You know, for my crew and the director, which happened to have been Oliver Stone, we all stood in the middle of this. And for the actors and truly the first responders who were at Ground Zero were all brought to L.A. and they reenacted the final scene. And so all the first responders were invited for the scene in the film. They all walked on the set and they were all crying like babies. It was so overwhelming for them. Mm-hmm. That, to me... it is really what it's about. You know, I have to say I'm still always amazed at how much you asked, did I know how much of an impact something's got to give? I'm thrilled that it had such a wonderful impact. But I think it only had that because it was a character in the film. What we're really there to do is to shape the film and to be the vessel that the actors work in. So in Something's Gotta Give, people forget they weren't looking at real Ground Zero. They were looking at a set.
Right.
So you would say you're more proud of something like World Trade Center as a set designer, decorator. I mean, that you're more proud of that for your craft. Is that what you mean?
It challenges me in many more ways than, let's say, doing a beautiful house.
See, it's funny because I would say, ooh, I don't want to do that. I want to do a pretty house, you know? So it's interesting because it's not really designing for you. It's more creating the set, I guess. Is that?
It's not terribly different. You're dealing with materials instead of fabrics. You're dealing with texture. You're dealing with color. You're dealing with scale. You're dealing
personality.
With personality, interpretation in
how somebody lives in it, and how somebody lives in an environment. What the story is behind.
But the concourse is not a beautiful house in the Hamptons or Santa Barbara. It's
big is your crew, Beth? When you work on a movie,
it depends. It's when I did American Gangster.
I loved that set. That was such a fabulous, and you Academy Award nominated for that.
And I was pregnant with my twins at the time.
Oh my God!
And that was a lot in the '70s, right? This
it was. Yeah. It was a period film. And, you know, so we had to redo everything. Every visual piece of graphic, every sign, every poster you saw on the streets.
Has to be so intense. That whole, when you do a period, people are so particular who are watching these movies. I mean, everything from fonts are going to be examined.
Absolutely.
You know, when you talk about signage.
You can't have any barcode or zip, your phone numbers and your zip codes better be correct.
What do you do to prepare yourself for something like that? For instance, a period piece. What's the process?
We also have people work with us. We gather enormous amounts of reference. Written, written reference, visual reference, video reference. You absolutely have to really get a sense of the period. From not only from furniture and fabrics and artwork, but you also have to know what media campaigns, what products were being sold at the time. Because once again, once you are creating the interiors in their world, what the choices that they make in their homes and product choices are part of the story or define who the characters are.
Right.
So someone can have, a Finjul chair and another person's going to have something from Sears. And that's a fun.
You are describing, the methodology behind becoming part of a role. So you're creating this role, it sounds like.
Thank goodness, or I'm knocking on wood from my history, I have not had problems where an actor has walked into a set and suddenly couldn't function in that set. It's happened in the past with people. That doesn't mean that what they've delivered isn't wonderful or terrific or looks great, but ultimately, if an actor can't function in the space, you have to change it.
But do you mean what they've already decided they're who they are and that, or that character is?
Sometimes in film, the actors have very, very short period of time that they come in. They're only scheduled for X amount of days. Things are shot out of continuity. So an actor can walk into, this is your home. They walk in and it's like, that's not in their head or how they rehearsed it or how they thought. They can walk in and feel that there aren't elements there that they need to work with. And once again, it's not that it has to be spoken and it's very subjective. But when that happens, you basically have to, the departments are there to support the actors and you have to make sure that it works for them and the director.
But you said that that's never actually happened to you?
It has not.
That's good.
Not as far as the actors, no.
One of the movies that you did, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, is A River Runs Through It.
John Huffman and myself.
Oh, was that? Yeah, I'm looking at it at IMDb. Yeah. And what I really remember about the set of that movie, of course, is the very Midwestern Spartan quality, but the wallpaper. I remember there being really beautiful wallpaper in that house.
Yeah. There was a lot of period wallpaper, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That really, aside from getting past looking at Brad Pitt, the wallpaper was just...
And he was very young at the time.
He was very
young. That's kind of what I remember. I think I was in college when that came out, and I hate to say it, that's what I remember about the movie.
You've worked with him a few times now, Brad Pitt.
Yes.
Oh, that's hard.
When you have period wallpaper, do you ever have things recreated?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had done a movie in Mexico, and a movie not too many people have seen, but we thought it was quite beautiful, called Original Sin, with Angelina Jolie and Antonio Banderas. Nice couple. we had built these beautiful haciendas on stage. The craftsmanship was astounding. I literally walked onto one set and they were working on the ceilings, and I honestly started crying. It was just, you know, they were carving beautifully. It was just so heart-wrenching. But we did not have, for this one hacienda that we were doing, we did not have money or time to bake the tiles, the pattern that we wanted. So we Xeroxed, you know, we did a digital, and we just printed up the entire floor and glazed it, and it looks fantastic. And it's, you know, it's basically a paper floor, as a beautiful Mexican tiled floor.
Well, I would think there must be a lot of that in set decorating. Yeah, because I know just in the questions,
the granite.
What is the kitchen counter? And my understanding is it was painted wood. Is that correct? And the something's got to give.
Something's got to give. We did it as soapstone. It was painted. It was definitely a painted high. One of my twins has woken up and come downstairs.
Why you weren't on the holiday?
Oh, because I was doing, for two very specific reasons. I was doing World Trade Center. They asked me to come over, and I didn't want any part of it. I really wanted to finish the project I was on and take some time off. John and I had just done, in succession, we went from Something's Gotta Give. John and I then did The Interpreter. We'd done a huge amount of commercials. He and I were leapfrogging for a company. And then I did this project. He went on to do Holiday. And I just, it was a matter of my schedule. It was purely a choice of project and schedule. Once again, for me, I didn't want to do two or three or four major interior-oriented films in a row, because then you become channeled that's all you can do. Mm-hmm. And as much as I absolutely, I don't want you to think that I don't absolutely adore the interiors, and I adore doing residential, and I have a wonderful time doing it. I just also love the challenge of enormous amount of equipment and big crews, and you know, that is a very different beast, and it's an honor and a privilege that I have the ability to jump onto those type projects.
Yeah, I can't even fathom the, I just can't.
It's such a broad range of skills.
Yeah, it's very impressive, I have to say.
The only thing that's impressive to producers is that, for me, is that I can do small budget films and huge budget films. You know, what they don't like is once you start doing huge budget films, they never allow you to go back to the smaller ones, and I like keeping my fingers in both pots.
It just seems overwhelming to me, honestly, when I hear you talking about the World Trade. For some reason, that World Trade, Joni, I'm still
I can't get over that. The metal.
I do. I sit there and think, my God, I mean, who does this? Who can do this?
That's Rubino, clearly.
It's impressive.
And still pick out a cute blue and white, dirty,
right. antique, not just pick it out, but actually recreate from antique. Yeah.
Beth, I did want to ask you, one of the questions I get all the time, and I imagine Joni does too, is what is the color of the paint in a movie? And clearly, I can't answer that question. But what I always tell people is it kind of doesn't matter, because, you know, it's a movie shot in a film studio under artificial
exactly
light.
Right.
So what would you tell people when they say, what's that color? Just find something similar?
It's kind of are you talking about specifically in Something's Gotta Give?
So, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it in Something's Gotta Give, but, you know, any movie. I get asked it for almost every movie I post.
I got an email last summer from Senator Kennedy at the time when, you know, they were still working on their home, or the assistants. They were having a difficult time trying to match the colors, and they called and said, you know, please, please, what should we do? And, you know, I explained to them that, you know, it's, you could look at Donald Kaufman, you could look at Benjamin Moore, just try to get it as close, but our colors were all done with our scenics, and it really was, you know, if you painted exactly the colors that we had, they would be much darker than you think, because the amount of light that we saturate in a set would, you couldn't live with. I mean, for us, just so you understand how coloring is, sheets that look white are basically dyed beige.
There's a blogger, a very popular blogger that started when all of us started, Anne Harwell, and she goes by the name of Anchovy. And we learned that her painting is in the bathroom where they're smoking the pot.
And it's complicated.
The orange chair.
There was a set of three. They're prints.
How did you find her?
You know what? I have to tell you, honestly, one of the assistants in the, I don't know if she was in, worked in the art department, locations department, she was, came across, you know, online some posters, and she found those and brought them to us, and we thought they were the cutest things.
They are. And we were so excited. It was like someone from, you know, from our
family.
Team.
Like,
yay! They're like, good for her. I'm so excited.
They were on a site online, and it was just, and that's how things happen. You know, someone's looking online, look at this, and you say, oh, that will work. You know, that's how it happens.
Is a lot of this done on sound sets, or is a lot of it done in Culver City in sound stages, or are they done on location? How much does it just depend on the project?
Totally depends on the project. The theory basically is if you have multiple days and you need control, it's better to build it. Because I don't know if you know what a wild wall is. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
No.
You know, this is like film talk or lingo. Walls Wild, the house, the Santa Barbara house on It's Complicated, was basically suspended from the ceiling on cables, you know, onto a platform that we built. So at any time, all the walls break away and camera could pull in and out.
Oh, yeah.
So you can
fly the wall up.
Exactly. Yeah. That goes for almost any built set. And so it enables crews, which there's many people behind and around the camera, and lighting equipment and grip equipment. So basically rooms are just very easy to manipulate. When you go on location, you know, you can only box so many people into a room. But the general... theory is when you need the production value of a true location, you're on location, and other than that, you try to build. And budget also impacts what's built and not built.
Is it more expensive to build or to jerry-rig an already built property, or does it vary?
That varies. Yeah. It depends on how many days you're going to be there. What the location cost is, you know, they look at when you're doing schedules and decisions of build versus not build are based generally monetarily. And that, you know, that and the ability of flexibility in the set would dictate if producers want it built or not. Some directors like built sets. Some directors like locations.
Have you ever been to Nancy Meyer's personal house?
Yes, I have. Yes,
she's building a new one, right?
She is. She actually bought the property very near to where her property is. And yeah, she's building a new house.
Beth, have you done any private decorating for people?
I have.
I think I had read that at some point. Do you still do it, or is that something you're now just too busy doing the movies? Or
no, I'm actually doing a project right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it based on maybe the Something's Gotta Give house?
No, not at all.
Joni, that's all Joni wants.
I know, there is life beyond the Something's Gotta Give house, Joni.
And there is?
It's shocking, I know.
I have to say, I did a big project a year and a half ago, a residential property in Ojai, and did a kitchen, which is very, the entire house is very saturated in color.
I'd love to see that.
I'm dying to see it. Okay, go on.
The homeowners have told me that they actually just had a very big party there recently, and they had caterers, and I got an email during the party from the homeowner saying that they had a very, very, very tawny caterer there. And she said, and I designed, you know, a good part of, I designed the whole house, but she thought the kitchen was very, very smart. And I just thought that was, you know, the homeowner thought that I would love that. And I just thought that was so neat that you took, you know, 2 minutes out to email me that. That was great.
Okay, about, it's complicated. I just thought of this. Someone, I read a comment somewhere, and they were, you know, being ugly because there was a dent in the refrigerator. And I thought, that wasn't on at, that was there on purpose, correct?
Well, we, yes, and no. We unpacked it, and it was dented, and we loved that.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
So, yes, I mean, when we, that was a choice. When you bring in a piece like that, it would have been just as easy to turn around and say, you have to put a new door. You know, we just need a new panel. And we said, no, not at all. It's perfect. You know, it's just absolutely.
Well, because she was remodeling the kitchen. And so it would make sense that, you know, the refrigerator was dented. Well, this really upset this one commenter, you know, but.
Oh, no, we absolutely chose not to replace, the damaged good that we got.
Yeah. Again, because you're not necessarily decorating, you're creating the story of where these characters take place and the whole thing behind it, you know, I mean.
Well, there was an interesting comment, what you just said is, and this is something, even when I do my residential work, and it's residential interior design and decorating, the people who I'm working with, I, you know, get into much more of, I'm delivering a lot for them, not just the furnishings and the basic you walk in. We've developed enough of a friendship and relationships that I am now working with them like I do on a set, and I'm evolving their visual of who they are.
Well, Beth, thank you so much for joining us. This was just so much fun.
Thank you, ladies. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Beth.
Happy New Year.
You too. This has been the Skirted Roundtable with Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8, Joni Webb from Cota, Texas, and I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings. This week we are joined by Academy Award nominated set decorator Beth Rubino. Thank you so much for joining us. You can visit us online at www.skirtedroundtable.blogspot.com, or you can download our podcasts from iTunes. Search for the Skirted Roundtable. We appreciate your listening, and we'll be back soon.